Let's head to Washington, D.C., and Congressman Bill Flores joins us. Good morning, Congressman. How are you today?
Good morning, Scott. Great to be with you again this week.
We moved from Wednesday to Thursday because I know the time is ticking as far as being able to get a budget taken care of, and where do we stand on that right now?
Well, what was up in the air when we decided to move the conversation to this morning is whether or not we were going to do a 12-bill appropriations package or a 4-bill appropriations package. I had hoped to have some definition on that and be able to provide the news that we're going to go to a 12-bill appropriations package, which takes all of the angst out of government funding starting October the 1st. But at this point in time, we're still pursuing the 4-bill route. Now, this is important stuff because it's the earliest that we've done it in all the time that I've been at Congress. And so in the 4-bill solution, we're funding the Defense Department, we're funding military construction, we're funding the VA, and we're funding the energy and water parts, which is, you think, infrastructure of that, parts of government. It's about 65% of total discretionary spending. So it's an important deal, but we were hoping to wrap in 12 bills and do one big consolidated appropriations bill and get it done before August. Now, if that would have happened, we would have wound up working an extra 5 to 9 days into August beyond the normal work period that's on the calendar. I don't have a good answer for you on that right now. I'm hopeful that we'll have an answer on it before Friday or tomorrow, because tomorrow's the last day of the calendar until September.
Well, and again, the work has to get done. I know there are amendments that are put into all sorts of the bills that you look at. I know that yesterday the House rejected a couple of amendments to the spending bill that actually late last night that would have cut funds to the Congressional Budget Office. Now, this has always been called a nonpartisan office, but the Congressional Budget Office has to score all of these bills that you deal with, what kind of financial impact they're going to have. How do you feel about the funding for the CBO?
Well, I think the CBO still has some inherently broken processes. The numbers they provided in terms of insured population, in terms of the insured population, have been way off. And so they used the same flawed logic that they used back when they first scored the implementation of Obamacare, and they missed the numbers by well over 50%. And so they didn't learn from that, and so they provided the same numbers when it came to our scoring our health care bill. And what's really fascinating, they're showing more people that choose to come off of coverage under our bill than are on coverage today. So I don't understand that, particularly the Medicaid population. Why would the Medicaid population decide that it's going to drop its coverage when that coverage is free? And so basically there were a couple of bills to send a signal to CBO that they've got to get their act together. And if they can't do it with current funding, maybe we cut their funding, that'll get their attention, and they'll start changing their ways. So I voted for both those bills to send a message to the CBO, but both of them did fail. But we've got to get CBO recalibrated so that they're more accurate in what they've done, what they're doing.
Well, yeah, clear that they do need to do a better job. Their numbers have been way off, certainly. All right, let's turn to the other body. Let's turn to the Senate. This is really a situation where it sounds like they're tone deaf as far as the Republican leadership is concerned.
Oh, my gosh, it's the most dysfunctional mess I've ever seen. In our town hall meetings this week, just on a macro basis, we talked about how many bills we passed in the House this year. This has been the most productive House in the last five presidencies. And the Senate has been the least productive Senate in the last several presidencies. It's just remarkable how they can't get anything done over there. And now in this health care bill, they're thinking about passing what they call a skinny repeal, which means you get rid of the medical device tax, and then you get rid of the individual mandate. The problem with doing just those two pieces is, particularly on the individual mandate side, is that you accelerate the implosion of the Obamacare exchanges. Now, the Obamacare exchanges are blowing themselves up right now, but if you accelerate that, then you've got a Republican fingerprint on that. And so then the Republicans, you know, get blamed for it worse than we would anyway. And we had nothing to do with the original structure of Obamacare. So I think it's a really dumb solution, and I'm surprised that they think that's the only thing they can pass. I mean, I think they need to grow up and relook at their rules and look at and say, are we still putting our institutional rules ahead of the Constitution? Are we still going to put them ahead of our constituents? Are we still going to put them ahead of what's good for the country? But they can't seem to come to that, just that basic decision to get those 1800 eras rules out of the way and move forward with a 21st century governance solution.
Congressman Bill Floor is joining us from Washington, D.C. This morning on America's First News, there was a report of a letter signed by 10 governors saying we need to have a seat at this table. Do the governors need to be part of this discussion?
Well, they already have been. I mean, when the House, over the last 6 years, or six and a half now, when the House started putting together its replacement for Obamacare, we had the governors at the table, and we had their individual Medicaid leaders, the leaders of their Medicaid program. So they've had a seat at the table. That said, I think given the fact that the Senate can't get anything done, we probably ought to get them back at the table and try to see if we can do something to move forward, because a lot of them really changed their story once we passed our bill, and they decided, well, maybe we need to have a bigger say again, even though they had a say originally. So what could happen here is if the Senate passes its skinny repeal bill, then the House can say, okay, we're going to go to conference with you. We'll take our bill and put it on the table. You take your skinny repeal bill and put it on the table. And then you bring in the governors, you bring in the specialists, you bring in patients, you bring in hospitals, you bring in all of you bring in the family practitioners and the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies, and you figure out what's the solution that takes care of putting the patient and the provider back together to have a discussion about health care.
You mentioned that you had a couple of town hall forums this week. What did you hear from your constituents there?
Well, we had health care was, of course, one of the big issues. Veterans care was another big issue. We had a couple of questions on the deficit. Had quite a few questions about President Trump, a few questions about the Russia investigations. We had a pretty holistic set of issues come up with our constituents. I was really pleased with the participation in these. On Monday, we called northern counties in the district, and we had over 5,000 people participate in the call. And on Tuesday, we called the southern part of the district, which runs from College Station over to Austin. And we had over 4,000 people on that call. And so I was real pleased with the participation. I was real pleased with the quality of the discussion that we had with our constituents. And, the questions they asked are the things that it gave me good feedback that we know what our constituents are concerned about.
Well, I've certainly still hear from listeners who want to know, and I understand the logistics of doing it electronically, but they still want to know, when can we have you on the stage with a microphone talking to people face-to-face?
Well, let's walk through this for a minute. There are several reasons to look at a technology-based town hall solution. Number one is convenience and access. We have never had more than 300 people in an in-person town hall. But on these two calls, we had 5,000 on one and over 4,000 on the other, using a combination of the telephone and or Facebook Live or the online portal that we have as well. And so we have greater access and reach to our constituents, or greater participation. Their convenience, it's very convenient for our constituents to be able to participate this way. Also the security for our constituents is a lot easier to handle on a technology-based town hall than it is on an in-person town hall. And then here's sort of the thing that seals the deal, and that is, what do our constituents want? And so in each of the last two sets of town hall meetings, we have polled our constituents to find out what town hall format they like the best. And the results were overwhelming. Back in the April series of town halls, we had about a 60% preference for telephone town halls. In this set of town halls, on Monday night, when we had 5,000 people that participated, there was an 80% preference for technology-based town hall. And on Tuesday night, a 71% preference. If you're an elected member of Congress, why would you go against that? And here's another kind of here's another factor that played into the town halls this time. When we originally were putting our calendar together a few months ago for our town hall series, we had notionally penciled in town hall meetings in some of our rural areas for the first several days of August. And in order to do that, it takes several weeks of planning to get your venue, get your security, get all, make sure that you promoted it to the local community and all that. And we had a sort of a wild card thrown at us a few weeks ago when we started talking, when our leadership started talking about holding us over deeper into August to stay up here in Washington. And so that really, that blew up the ability to be able to plan those physical town halls. And so we decided, well, let's go ahead and we'll hard code the technology town halls. And that way we know we can get them done. And so those were the factors that led into this. But overwhelmingly, the constituents like the technology town halls because of the access and the convenience.
Sure. Well, that's good. I appreciate the long answer, but that I think answers most all. There's going to be people who are going to be frustrated no matter what you do or don't do. Well, you mentioned that. So when will we hear that you may be staying extra time?
We should know by about 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
All right. We'll look forward to that. Congressman Bill Flores joins us every week. You can hear the entire interview archived on the website at WTAW.com. We appreciate you talking with us this morning.
Great talking to you, Scott. I'd ask our listeners to continue praying for our country and our military men and women and our first responders.
Great. Thanks.